from Greece to England to Hawaii to Virginia. There's some breaking news, and we've got you covered today right here on The Line of Fire.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I am in the midst of a wonderful blizzard. I'm tempted to say glorious blizzard here in Denver, Colorado. I haven't been in such thick, heavy snow in quite a while. Got to clean off my vehicle this morning and drive in the midst of a blizzard. It's nice, though, being here because they actually know how to handle snow and people know how to drive in snow. And it turns out because there were a couple of mistakes on my rental car when I went to pick it up that with my New York Jewish-friendly aggression, I was able to get upgraded, and they gave me a really nice SUV, which I understand is always four-wheel and made for snow at no extra charge. So anyway, I'm having a blast here in Denver. We've got a bunch of things literally around the world we want to talk about today. A special guest is about to join me. We're going to talk about an important case going on in New York City, but keep your seatbelts fastened. We've got a lot to talk about, a lot of issues I want to get your input feedback on. Here's the number to call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884, online, askdrbrown.org. Click on The Line of Fire. If you'd like to see a nice blizzard picture taken from my vehicle, just go to our Facebook page, Ask Dr. Brown, Ask Dr. Brown. Okay, years ago when I was teaching on Long Island at a Bible school, one of our grads was pastoring a little church way out east on Long Island called Lamb's Chapel, and was prohibited from using a public facility for a church teaching series, even though other groups had been able to use it, New Agers or whatever. So the case was taken up by attorneys on the island, then Migliorian and Franco, dear friends of mine. And then the case ultimately was taken up by Jay Sekulow and ACLJ, and it went to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court ruled 9-0 that churches could use these public facilities for their services. And now something has developed. We've talked about it a little on the air, but as things are moving forward, we're bringing on an attorney, Jordan Lawrence, with the Alliance Defense Fund, who can explain what's happened in New York City and the gravity of this. Jordan, I know you're busy. Thanks for taking time out of your schedule to join us.
And I was one of the trial attorneys at the Lamb's Chapel case with Joe and Franco. So I hadn't thought about that case in a while. But
yeah, really.
Yeah, and it's 20 years later, and it's deja vu all over again here in New York City, which remains the last enclave resisting equal access. And they get slapped down about every 10 years by the Supreme Court. And once again, they are on the verge, February 12th, expelling the churches that have been allowed to meet under a court injunction for the last 9 years. So people realize the churches are meeting right now, and it's because of this injunction won by the Alliance Defense Fund and Bronx Household of Faith. But the Supreme Court, it got overturned by an appeals court. The Supreme Court denied review on December 5th. So the city school board has said everybody is out after church on February 12th. But what they did not expect was this huge backlash, which has erupted among the people, the city council, and the state legislature in New York.
All right, Jordan, we've just got about 30 seconds before our first break. Joe Infranco, of course, is now with the Alliance Defense Fund, has been a colleague of yours for many years now. But just in 30 seconds, how can the court make this decision in light of the Lamb's Chapel Supreme Court decision?
Because the appeals court here called the Second Circuit has been defiant and resistant to accept the Supreme Court's equal access decisions. Lamb's Chapel is one of five they've done since 1981, and it was really sad that the Supreme Court did not step in and rebuke this divergence and defiance of what it said.
All right, Jordan, we come back. We'll just take a few minutes, talk about the implications of this on a local and a national level, and then what Christians can and should do. My guest, Jordan Lawrence, with the Alliance Defense Fund. This is an important issue, friends. We'll be back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us today on The Line of Fire. We've got a lot of things to cover here on this Wednesday as we focus on the world, on moral and cultural issues. We as God's people are to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. We need to understand what's happening in society and how to respond in a righteous, godly way for the sake of truth, for the sake of justice. If we don't, we've got nobody to blame but ourselves. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org. Talking with Jordan Lawrence, a lead attorney with the Alliance Defense Fund, about the decision in New York City that would kick congregations out of public buildings, high schools, other schools. Some of them have been using these buildings for years and years. Jordan, a general question and then a couple of specific questions. General question, Rick Perry has recently accused President Obama of waging a war against religion. There are some in New York who feel that Mayor Bloomberg is waging a war against religion. A case like this makes people wonder what's happening in New York in general. Is this hyperbole? Do we have some kind of persecution complex when we make statements like this? Or is there any truth to it in your judgment, being on the front lines with these cases every day?
Well, I think there is some truth to it, but I would put it a little bit differently. I think it's a mindset that overemphasizes the concept of separation of church and state that is different than what's in the Constitution, and then also a view that who in their right mind would want to belong to a church? They don't do anything. They believe goofy stuff. They don't help people. And it's sort of a combination of those two. So I don't know if it's like malicious persecution, like the Muslims, killing Coptic Christians in Egypt, for example. I don't think it's on that level, but I do think that there's sort of this gross indifference that churches aren't any worth anything, and separation of church and state has driven them out. And Mayor Bloomberg, who could change this with one stroke of his pen, has an opportunity, if he wants, in the final 2 years of his mayoral run here, to change all of this and not throw the churches out on February 12th.
So how could he overrule the courts? By what power?
The courts simply said this is a permissible policy under the Constitution. We argued that the free exercise of religion and freedom of speech, like Jay Sekulow did in Lance Chapel, and the Supreme Court agreed with him, says that they can't have a policy like this. And they said, no, if they want to, they can have a policy. Now, they can also change the policy and allow the churches to meet. So this is purely a permissive public policy issue for the mayor, the Department of Education, as well as the state legislature.
All right. So are there implications for Christians outside of New York City? That's the first question. And second question, what should believers be doing that live in the greater New York area?
Let me just say this. I think it does have implications nationally. Now, we've been looking, our ADF attorneys, at the policies of the top 50 school districts in terms of student population. New York City is obviously number one. The other 49 do not have policies like this. A religious group can rent a school on the weekend in Chicago or Los Angeles or Las Vegas or you name it, and have their church there. New York City is alone among major cities with this kind of policy. But if it is permitted, we're concerned that what happens in New York doesn't stay in New York. And if the churches are allowed to meet here, they can meet anywhere. And I'm done with my cliches, but you get the idea of what.
Yeah.
I think that this is something that could definitely spread. And I'm urging people, if they live in the New York City area, to come to the rally tomorrow at noon at Morris High School in the Bronx, where the mayor is giving his State of the City address. And there's going to be a large protest rally organized by City Councilman Fernando Cabrera and other pastors. Bishop Matera, you probably know him, is one of the leaders of this. But also, I think anywhere people live in the United States, write, call, email Mayor Michael Bloomberg and say, we're watching you. What is this? Why, in our community, we allow churches and other religious groups to meet, and it's no big deal. Why do you throw them out in New York City? You know, if you're thinking of running for president or want the reputation of your city to be good, change this policy and keep the churches in after February 12th.
And really, if you look at it honestly, even on a public opinion level, it would be looked at as a positive thing to do. I can't imagine that the general consensus of New Yorkers is here. You should kick these people out of these school buildings, and they shouldn't be allowed to hold services. But, you know, we do have the situation, Luke 18, where there was a man who didn't fear God, and he didn't care about people. Let's hope that one of the two applies to Mayor Bloomberg. What would be a good turnout at this rally, numbers that you'd feel good about on tomorrow?
I think if we have 1,000 people, that's what we are praying for, and I hope we would get even more than that, because this is such a gross violation of the Constitution. It doesn't make any sense for churches that are all through the five boroughs helping people. I mean, we've had churches that have painted the schools for them. They leave their musical instruments in an Assemblies of God church down in Staten Island for the students to use during the week. They have been nothing but givers and helpers, as well as, you know, helping people, you know, get out of juvenile delinquency, help put marriages back together, getting people off of drugs. Why in the world would people in New York say, no, we don't like this, we want to drive you out and basically shut down all these things that we're not paying for with our tax money?
Right. And the gospel, the presence of the church in society and the cities does good, brings about positive change. Okay, just once more, what time is the rally and where is it tomorrow?
The rally tomorrow is at noon Eastern Time, Thursday, at Morris High School in the Bronx. The mayor is giving his State of the City address, and we want people there. And if you can't get to New York City, go onto the website of Michael Bloomberg or the City of New York and write an email. I want them to hear that the whole world thinks that this is a ridiculous, wrong-headed policy that needs to be changed.
All right, and we will pray for God's righteousness to triumph. Jordan, thanks for everything
Amen.
That you and ADF do. Telladf.org is their website. God bless you, Jordan. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, look, I understand. I've written it. I've said it. The church is not a building. The emphasis in the New Testament is on being the church rather than going to church. However, we are called to meet together. We are called to assemble together. And to me, the bigger issue here, friends, is not so much where we meet, because we could be in a persecuted nation and have to break down and meet in homes and meet secretly. There are times in church history and in certain parts of the world today where the only way you get to a meeting is if the Lord tells you, because they don't announce where the meeting is to make sure spies don't infiltrate and arrest and torture and kill their people. And they pray and the Lord lays on their heart where they're supposed to be and they show up there. I mean, I've heard extraordinary stories, mind-boggling stories of cases like that. But that's not the case here in America. That's not our situation here in America. And the bigger issue, even more important than this physical issue we're dealing with, are the spiritual implications and the message that it sends. We're not doing this in some mean-spirited, angry way. We're doing this as lambs. We're not showing up with guns and knives and using profanity and cursing. Of course not. That's not who we are. That's not our nature. We're followers of Jesus. But followers of Jesus stand for righteousness. Romans 14:17, the kingdom of God is not a matter of eating and drinking, but a matter of righteousness, peace, and joy in the Holy Spirit. Matthew 6:33, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and the other things, the material things we need, will be added to us. Jesus rebuked religious hypocrites in Matthew 23. And he said, oh, you're great with tithing on the last little remnant of, you know, spices and so on. And you go beyond the letter of the law, but you've neglected justice, mercy, and faith. This is a matter of justice. This is a matter of doing what is right. And this is a matter where if we don't stand for what's right and don't gather together, then who knows what liberties, what freedoms are taken away from us next. In fact, the separation of church and state, as it's commonly thought of in American society today, is completely bogus. It is not what was intended by our founding fathers, or not what was intended by Thomas Jefferson in his famous letter to Baptists, who wanted to be sure that they would be protected from the state taking over. But this comes on other levels as well. And feel free to, I've got a few questions I want to ask as we go on, but feel free to weigh in on this, 866-34-TRUTH. 866-348-7884, especially if you're in the New York area, but feel free to weigh in. There are other aspects of challenges taking place right now having to do with churches and their facilities, their buildings. There's a major case focused on Virginia with Episcopalians, and, well, it's quite a story, and there's a bad decision that's just come down. I believe it can be turned for good, though. Stay with me. I'll fill you in.
Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us today on the Line of Fire as I come your way live from Denver, Colorado, in the midst of a beautiful, glorious blizzard. The only reason I hesitate to say glorious is because you always have accidents and maybe someone can get hurt in the snow. But otherwise, this display of beautiful snow, I don't get to see it enough in North Carolina. Rarest of rare. I can't remember snow this heavy since we've been in North Carolina. So I'm delighted to be in the midst of this blizzard. And then a few days later, fly out regardless of the weather. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884, online, askdrbrown.org. I want to play some clips for you from some of the presidential candidates on the Republican side and their stance on the redefinition of marriage. I want to do that in a little while. I want to give you a take on people who are critical of Mitt Romney. Again, we're doing this not to have a primary political focus here. That'll never happen on the Line of Fire. But to give some kingdom perspective and some thoughts on some important issues. There's some wild news from Greece, from Hawaii. There's some interesting news from England. I want to discuss that with you, get your feedback. But first, let's stay right within the continental United States here and look at this story. This is just a ruling that came down, I believe, just yesterday. It was forwarded to me late last night. It was sent out from the rector of Falls Church. Falls Church, a very well-known church, part of the Episcopal Diocese of Virginia, a historic church, as I say, well-known, influential for many, many years. Well, because of the consistent liberalizing of the Episcopalian Church and the ordaining of openly homosexual Bishop Gene Robinson, because of that, there have been many of the Episcopalian churches who have left. They have now started a new diocese. I don't know if that's the official term or word they're using for it, but they have started new affiliations with other former Episcopalian churches, working together with some Anglican churches in Africa. Remember, the Anglicans of England and other parts of the world are the Episcopalians of the United States. So the problem is they've been in these buildings for years and years and years. Who owns them? Who owns the buildings? If they leave the denomination because the denomination has left its historic roots, who owns these buildings, some of which are very expensive facilities, some of which are historic facilities, some of which have been used as bases of witness and ministry in the communities for countless decades? Who owns the buildings? Well, the ruling is that the buildings go back to the Episcopal Diocese and do not go to the churches, to the congregations themselves. So, press release: Virginia Anglicans remain prayerful amid church property rulings. So they are identifying as Anglicans because of their break with the Episcopalian Church of the United States. Seven Anglican congregations in Virginia that are parties to the church property case brought by the Episcopal Church and the Episcopal Diocese of Virginia are reviewing today's ruling by the Fairfax County Circuit Court that the property should be turned over to the Episcopal Diocese. The circuit court heard the case last spring after the Virginia Supreme Court remanded it in June 2010. The congregations previously had succeeded in their efforts on the circuit court level to defend the property that they bought and paid for. Now, this would also mean, as I understand it, the parsonages, many of the pastors would be living in a church parsonage that's provided along with the property for the church buildings. And Jim Oakes, spokesperson for the Seventh Anglican Congregation, said, "Although we are profoundly disappointed by today's decision, we offer our gratitude to Judge Bellows for his review of this case. As we prayerfully consider our legal options, we above all remain steadfast in our effort to defend the historic Christian faith. Regardless of today's ruling, we are confident that God is in control, that he will continue to guide our path." Reverend John Yates, rector of the Falls Church, again, this is historic property that's involved in the case, stated, "The core issue for us is not physical property." Friends, that's what I've been saying about what's happening in New York City. The core issue for us is not physical property, but theological and moral truth and the intellectual integrity of faith in the modern world. Wherever we worship, we remain Anglicans because we cannot compromise our historic faith. Like our spiritual forefathers in the Reformation, here we stand, so help us God. We can do no other. I feel that in all of these cases, a powerful testimony can come out. In different ways, in different settings, the case in New York City is quite different than the case we're talking about in Virginia. To focus on the case in Virginia in a moment, in my view, this is a great opportunity for these believers to say, just as this pastor said, we are following Jesus, period. And we are not following Jesus for convenience. We are not following Jesus based on political expediency. We are not following Jesus based on church politics. We are following Jesus based on what is true and what is right, and we are holding to our convictions. And in our view, the way that the Episcopalian Church has gone has violated biblical principles and historic principles of our faith. Therefore, we cannot be part of it. And we think it's unrighteous and wrong if we lose our facilities over it. Nonetheless, we will gladly lose our facilities over it to have the truth and to have the favor of the Lord. It is a great opportunity for testimony. And if everyone going through this will continue to honor the Lord as they have, watch and see, be it a year or 5 or 10 from now, watch and see how the Lord has turned this for good. Watch and see how the loss loses significance in comparison to the gains on 100 different fronts. Watch and see. Again, it's a totally different situation than what we're dealing with in New York City. But let us seize these moments to stand up for what is right, to pray, to be awakened to the fact that we are ultimately passing through this world, and let us make the maximum impact that we possibly can while we are here. Let us be unashamed of the gospel. Let these situations help us, push us to take our faith in a living way on the streets. There was a post, I'm embarrassed, by Tim Tebow, by Ragamuffin Soul. Tim Tebow makes no apologies about it. He's a believer of Jesus Christ and even has his own patented prayer move. He makes a lot of Christians happy. He makes a lot of Christians nervous. I'll admit it. I've said a few times things like, take it down a notch, Tebow. My friends and I sometimes watch what he does through our fingers as if watching a scary movie. He sings, "Lord, I lift your name on high" on national television. He gets mocked on Saturday Night Live for pulling the God card and every single thing he says. He prays to God to win a football game as if God somehow cares about the outcome of the game. Actually, he doesn't pray to win the game. Then yesterday happened. I was suddenly proud of Tebow talking about the victory. I was like, look at that great Christian role model. I'm a fan. And then the guy says, you know, actually, he said, you know what? I'm embarrassed by the fact that he's so open and I'm not. He said, my embarrassment is not about Tim Tebow. It's always about me, what people think of me. Because no matter how cheesy, no matter how brash, he is 100% more open about his faith on a daily basis than I am. The nervous feeling that we get is not wanting him to embarrass us as opposed to Christ. Truth is, Christ is more embarrassed by Christians who are embarrassed by Tim Tebow than anything Tebow will ever do. I share that just to say, let us use these difficult situations as a further encouragement to take our faith into the public square and to declare Jesus boldly and without shame. Would you stand with us? We need your help. We need your support. We are listener-sponsored. Now would be a great time to sow into this ministry. Give us a call, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. 278-9978 or go online, askdrbrown.org.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us, friends, on The Line of Fire today. It is a joy to be with you. 866-34-TRUTH. 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org. I'm covering a bunch of different topics. I want to bring in something completely off topic for a moment, but it still relates to taking our faith into the public square. Pastor Mark Driscoll is considered a great leader by many in the body and considered very controversial by others in the body. Many like him, others don't like him. No surprise when you're a prominent leader. I've read some things here and there, and I thought, awesome. I've read some other things that cringed over. But I don't know Mark personally, and I know that he wants to preach Jesus to many people and make disciples. Well, he and his wife came out with a book about sex and sexuality, and I saw a summary of major points in some articles that went out, and I thought, I'm glad they're taking these stands clearly and unashamedly. And then I thought, yeah, probably areas in the book itself that are controversial. And beyond that, though, that's I was pleased to see the general article and the write-up. Well, the other night, just trying to relax a little bit after 2 hours of radio and 6+ hours of seminary teaching, back in my hotel room, put on a news show, and it was Dr. Drew interviewing Mark Driscoll and his wife. And Dr. Drew had some of his colleagues with him who obviously did not share our moral views, and they got to talking about homosexual practice and other things like that. And Driscoll was as clear as could be. The Bible says it's sinful. I'm just the messenger. I stand with what the Bible says, and here's why God set things up the way he did with marriage, family. He was very clear about fantasy, thinking about other people, dreaming about other people, having sexual fantasies and things like that is wrong and sinful. Clear as a bell on it. And then a couple of other things came up about what the Bible says about other issues I'm not going to get into here and what's permissible or not within the bounds of marriage. And so that's probably where the most controversy would be. But what I was pleased to see was someone unashamedly saying God's ways are best, saying it not in a way that made him sound like a religious fundamentalist screaming and yelling. In other words, it would be hard to caricature him and his wife in that way. But they were very plainly and without apology saying, this is what the Bible says. This is what God's word teaches. This is what's best. And this is wrong and sinful and destructive, and therefore we stand against it, and we don't apologize for it. Then at the end, when they were finishing up and Dr. Drew, who was actually very gracious with them and his co-host, they were all getting in their final word and saying that they appreciate what he wrote and agree with a lot of what he wrote and so on. Mark Driscoll said, I just want to say one last thing. They said, you've got 5 seconds. He goes, look, it's all about Jesus. Sex is not the issue. He said, Jesus lived and died as a virgin. Sex is not the issue. Jesus is the issue. And in his last seconds, wanted to point things in that direction. I thought, oh, that's good. If I listened to him day and night, I'm sure there'd be issues where we'd have some differences, and you might pull out some quote from here and there that's controversial. I understand that. I just want to say that I was glad to see someone on national television not apologizing for what Scripture said. Again, I haven't read the book, but I'm simply saying based on what I read in a general article and what he said, I understand there'll be controversial areas about the book, but I was pleased to see someone, Christian leader, on national television not apologizing for what the Scripture said, making clear that God has a way that is best, and even the whole idea of, you know, fantasy and so on, and Mark Driscoll saying, look, your spouse should be the measure of beauty to you, you know, not some outside person, because the co-host of Dr. Drew said, well, you're always going to have these sexual fantasies, and they're fine, and they're good, and they're healthy, and Driscoll said, no, you can control your thought life, and your thoughts should be directed towards your spouse. Said, look at that, way to go, and then to point it to Jesus at the end, so again, I can't say more about it than that, but I watched and I was pleased to see it. And I thought, you can stand up for what is right without apology. If you get mocked for it, fine. If you don't get mocked for it, fine. But either way, do what is right. All right, back with your call. Stay with us. Shake the nation, change the world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us today on The Line of Fire. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. It's Wednesday. Our focus is on the world. We are looking at some key issues taking place in our society and in other parts of the world as well. Before I get to a story, where I want to go, either Greece or England. Let's see which way we go here in a moment. But before we do that, I want to take some calls, and then I want to play some clips for you from some of our Republican presidential candidates. Bill in Rotunda, West Florida, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown, I just want you, the audience, to know that I'm happily a monthly contributor to your ministry. Quick point.
Well, thank you, sir.
You're welcome. You deserve it and a lot more. God bless you for what you do. I believe that secularism is as dangerous as Islam, and I think that secularism has pretty much taken over the entire Western world. They have power over us in every way, and they're allowing us to live now, but I think at some point in the future, they may very well be complicit or enabling with Islam to kill us. And I also think that, minus spiritual things, the intellectual, cultural manifestation in scientific skepticism and the theory of evolution is one of their very, very foundational points, but it also has deeper spiritual roots. So I'd like to have your comment on that. And then one quick thing. I was at the Sarasota Jewish Community Center to see Waleed Shobat speak.
Yes.
And he gave a powerful testimony to Jesus. Even his book, which I won't mention the name of it on your
No, go
show,
ahead. Please
God's
do.
War on Terror. It's the best book on prophecy I've ever read in my life. It was on sale there, and rabbinic Jews in the community center were buying it. And he had many good things to say about, quote, fundamental Christians, and at one point, I couldn't contain myself. I shouted hallelujah like I do in my Pentecostal church. So I was identified as one of them. And afterwards, many, many of those dear Jewish brethren came up and said, thank you for caring about Israel. Thank you for you, quote, fundamentalist Christians. Because they know, quote, fundamentalist Christians have always read the Bible literally and have always loved the Jews back into the Puritan Revolution in England. So anyhow, our
amazing
love for Israel is paying off, and they bought.
Yeah, it's making a difference. Yeah, it's making a difference, Bill. And as I encourage everyone listening to get my book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, we'll let folks know how to do that in a little while. When you realize the horrific history of anti-Semitism in Jesus' name, by false followers of Jesus, and by confused and deluded followers of Jesus, and by sinning followers of Jesus. When you realize the horrific damage that's been done and how it has pushed people, Jews, away from Jesus for centuries, the fact that something like this could happen, that Waleed Shobat, former Islamic radical, now wonderful, committed follower of Jesus and friend of the Jewish people, the fact that he could speak in a synagogue and that your hallelujah didn't get you kicked out but got you thanked is remarkable. So back to your question. When we look at secular humanism, basically the secularizing of society and God not being welcome on the largest scale. Yeah, there really is a fundamental threat to religious freedoms through humanism, through secularism, or in a more subtle form, through materialism. In my book, Revolution, The Call of the Holy War, I talk about Pastor Richard Wormbrand, who was tortured for his faith for 14 years in Romanian prisons, horrific, mind-boggling abuse that he somehow survived by God's grace, 3 years in solitary confinement, constant beatings, tortures that are unimaginable. When I had the pleasure of sitting with him a few times and talking face-to-face, you can see his neck and other places just where he's got these holes and massive scars. And Wormbrand had freshly been ransomed out of his second imprisonment, was in the United States, and was at a Bible study in Minnesota, and he was trying to awaken the church in America, this is a few decades ago, to the horrors of communism and what it would do, because it was at that time being glorified by some in America. And he wanted to awaken the Americans to the suffering of the church under communism. when the meeting was over, the Bible study was over, one of my friends who's now with the Lord asked him, Pastor Wormbrand, why is it that we don't have communism to deal with here in America? And he said, oh, you have something far more dangerous. You have materialism. And I think we need to recognize the weight of that. We need to recognize that even in Europe, on the one hand, the Muslim population is growing by leaps and bounds. On the other hand, those that have been in Europe for longer periods of time, many of them, many of the Muslims, are becoming more secularized. Even their birth rates are dropping. It's very interesting to watch. Radical Islam continues to rise, but others, by the power of humanism, secularism, and materialism, are getting lulled into more of a carnal Western lifestyle. It's very interesting, Bill, that immigrants, say, coming from Mexico, the first generation, they have much higher birth rate, they have much lower crime rates, talking about legal immigrants coming into our country. But by the second generation, they are taking on many of the characteristics of our American population. There's more immorality among their kids, there's more drug use, the birth rates are dropping. And this is just our secular, worldly, materialistic way of thinking. So we've seen the power of secular atheism in countries like Russia and in countries like communist China. We know it can turn militant and violent. I think the biggest thing that we have to do, Bill, as believers is, number one, be unashamed of our faith, be public and bold with wisdom and compassion, but be public and bold about our faith, be unashamed, refuse to go get put back in the closet, distinguish ourselves from those that are violent and hateful so that we can demonstrate who Jesus really is, and keep ourselves free from the love of this world, and in doing so, put to death the god of materialism that seductively tries to suck the life out of us. But, Bill, thanks for calling, and thanks for being one of our torchbearers. I really appreciate it.
God bless you, Dr. Brown.
God bless you. For those that don't know, torchbearers are those who support our ministry work, and Line of Fire is the hub of all that we do in our ministry in America and around the world and to the Jewish people. Torchbearers are those who give at least $25 a month to support the ministry. Some are able to give more than that. And every month we send them a new CD. In fact, we're about to be sending out the DVD of my recent trip to India, which I know is going to be a tremendous blessing for them to have and watch and share with others. We give our torchbearers a 15% discount on all online purchases and free access to our online classes on holiness and revival and Jewish roots, things like that, classes that cost at least $50 each to watch. We'll be adding more in the coming months. So if you're able to support us, stand with us, give us a call, 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. All right. Before we listen to some of our political candidates, let me get your take on something that has happened in England. I want to get your take on this. And in fact, let me just pull this up. There are Muslims in England who are handing out leaflets saying that homosexuals should be put to death. Five men on trial for giving out these leaflets in England. They're Muslims. They publicly distribute a leaflet calling for gay people to be given the death sentence. The pamphlet was entitled The Death Penalty? And showed an image of a mannequin hanging from a noose. It said sodomy was a sin that led to hell, that it used to be punished by hanging, and that people practicing and allowing homosexuality would suffer, the court was told. They are accused of stirring up hatred on the grounds of sexual orientation. In the first prosecution of its kind since legislation came into force in March 2010, they deny the charges. Now, here's my question for you. In England, street preachers, without even mentioning homosexuality, have been asked privately, what's your view on homosexual practice? And they said, well, it's sin according to Scripture, and then gone on preaching and have been arrested for hate speech. Should we welcome something like this in England, in terms of handing out a pamphlet saying that homosexuals should be put to death, obviously something that we absolutely stand against? Should we applaud this in England, saying, well, good, stop this before perhaps Muslims start taking the law into their own hands and killing homosexuals in England or others? or should we recognize, as wrong as the leaflet is, as wrong as the pamphlet is that they were giving out, although it may have certain things that are accurate in it, I haven't read the whole pamphlet, should we recognize this as a further infringement on religious rights that will also trap innocent people? What do you think? 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. So again, my question, even if the leaflet itself espoused things that none of us would espouse, do we think it's good for the courts to get involved and say that this is hate speech based on sexual orientation, or should we recognize that this is just another way for courts of England to ultimately go after Christians for holding to what they believe in the Bible? 866-34-TRUTH. We'll be back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I am looking at the clock and realizing that some of those audio clips I wanted to play will have to be played in the next hour. So those who wanted to hear where some of the presidential candidates stand on the redefinition of marriage or how they address this issue, we'll play those clips in the next hour so you can catch it online. AskDrBrown.org. Click on The Line of Fire, and later this afternoon, everything will be up. You can listen to it. So some years ago, there was a case brought against the Unification Church, Reverend Sun Myung-moon, who claimed to be the Messiah. It's a cult, of course. It had a strong following in Korea, and then they came over to the United States. And there was a case that came against him, and all of these religious groups, along with all of these secular groups, joined together. I mean, they're normally on the opposite side of these cases. They joined together to defend him because they knew that if his religious rights were attacked, then it could mean everyone's religious rights were attacked. So it was the strangest coalition of believing Christians working with secularists and atheists, standing together with the Unification Church. All right, we have a case in England where five Muslims are handing out tracts after a mosque service, which says that the only way to really deal properly with homosexuality is to put homosexuals to death. Of course, we deplore that statement. We utterly reject and repudiate that statement. There may have been other things in the tract that I agreed with in terms of homosexual practice being immoral or wrong. I haven't seen the tract. But they are now accused of hate speech, and hate speech specifically based on sexual orientation that would make the penalty all the more severe. Should we say, look, we've got to stop things like that and extremist literature like that and hateful literature like that, and we should agree with what the courts are doing, or should we recognize that the same courts doing this are the ones that could potentially come against a Christian cafe owner? This happened just a few months ago. He was interrogated by police in England because in his Christian cafe, he had the Bible playing on television. And there's a monitor in his cafe, and he has the scriptures playing the whole time. He was interrogated by police for something like an hour and a half because he had the Bible playing, and the Bible contains verses against homosexuality. Is it going to lead to something very wrong that would bring persecution of true believers who are holding to biblical convictions, and not just prosecution of people calling for death to homosexuals? 866-34-TRUTH. I know it's a complicated question, but we've got a lot of thinking listeners here on The Line of Fire. Let me get your perspective. Gail in Randolph, Massachusetts, what's your take on this?
First of all, thank you for taking my call. I listen to you every day.
But, well, thanks, Gail.
This sounds something like, almost like a ploy, like what's in Sharia law. Like, you'll get two people that are co-owners of a piece of land, and they both want to build a mosque, but they want to do it in two different ways. So they take it before the court, and then the court can't decide. And this is why they say, you know, you don't understand, because, you know, this could be settled through Sharia law, and it's a sneaky way of getting things that they want done into
and
like
yet, let,
a
let me just
system.
Jump in and yeah, let me just jump in, Gail, and say that there are places in America today where courts have ruled that even though what a particular person did would be a violation of our laws, under Sharia law, it would not be a violation. And the courts have decided based on that. And there are some communities in America that are predominantly Muslim that say, hey, this is our community. We're Muslims living here. We should be able to adjudicate based on Sharia law. And you'd have a parallel, say, in an ultra-Orthodox Jewish community, if they were having a dispute, they would do their best to decide it in-house based on rabbinic law rather than go to secular courts. However, the difference here would be that Sharia law would become the law for that community. So it's not some wild-eyed, complex Islam trying to take over mentality that's saying this is happening. No, it is happening little by little in different parts of America. And again, we need to look at what's right and what's lawful and what's just. All right, so your take then on the England situation with regard to the hate speech charges?
Well, we know that, sodomy is a sin, but we don't take it and go after people and just murder them. I mean,
of course,
law
God forbid.
Takes care of that.
Nor do we want laws that say they should be put to death, of course.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, we're not here to judge the world. We can look at each other and as Christians and be fruit inspectors, but we're not here to judge. That's God's job.
All right. So in your view, then, what the courts are doing is good, even though it could potentially lead to restrictions over our freedoms of speech.
No, I don't say that. I'm saying that I don't think that that it should get into that the homosexuality practices should be even. We shouldn't. In other words, they shouldn't be going to court. They shouldn't restrict what you're giving out. If it's to the point where you're inciting judgment on another person, then that's when they should step in.
All right. So bottom line, then, regardless of what the situation is, if you are inciting potential violent acts or calling for the death of others for skin color, for personal practice, if they like the Boston Red Sox instead of the New York Yankees, whatever the thing is, if they wear a hat or don't wear a hat, that's the real issue, and that's what has to be focused on. I certainly agree that if we are inciting hatred and violence and stirring up trouble for a group of people, and it's intentionally saying, these people should be killed, these people should be killed, yeah, that is an issue. If you had pastors saying, abortion doctors should be killed, well, you better believe that they should be stopped from saying that. Of course, I don't know any pastors that would even think of uttering such words. The problem, though, Gail, as much as I agree with that sentiment, is that these types of laws can then be used against legitimate freedoms. But thank you for weighing in, and thank you for listening on a daily basis. You know, I'm going to continue this discussion into the next hour for those who want to weigh in, because I just got it started here. And some things I want to talk about in Hawaii, Greece didn't get to yet, that I'm going to talk about in the next hour. But friends, I want to encourage you again, if you don't have a copy of Our Hands Are Stained With Blood, I'm going to share some excerpts from it with you tomorrow that'll cause your hair to stand on end. Get a copy, $12 postage paid. The church must know the pain and the history of the Jewish people. 866-34-TRUTH, 1-800-278-9978 to order. Sorry about that, guys. 1-800-278-9978 to order. Postage paid, just $12, the least expensive we've ever put it out, because we want to get it to as many of you as possible. Get multiple copies, because once you get it, you're going to realize you need all your friends and pastors and other colleagues to read it. 1-800-278-9978 or order online, askdrbrown.org, click on the line of fire. My bottom line today, as we see so many forces in society rising up against us from so many different fronts, this is not the time to cower in a corner. This is not the time to become timid. This is a time to be bold, to be open, to be unashamed about Jesus, who he is, and what he has called us to do. Step forward, don't back down. From Greece to England to Hawaii to Virginia, There's some breaking news, and we've got you covered today right here on The Line of Fire.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Are you ready to put on your thinking caps today? Are you ready to think through some issues with me today? Are you ready to hear some kind of shocking news? Well, you're in the right place. Michael Brown, welcome to The Line of Fire. Yeah, I'm having a wonderful time in Denver this week, and it has become especially wonderful by the fact that there is a beautiful blizzard taking place. I don't know exactly what the weather is right now, but it was a beautiful blizzard when I drove in. You couldn't see where lanes were on the road. At times, the snow was coming down heavily enough that maybe you had a few hundred feet visibility at most in front of you as you tried to look down the road. What a joy to get out of my vehicle and to actually have a brush and an ice scraper in the rental vehicle. You know, you don't get that in a lot of places in America. Clean off all the snow off the vehicle and drive in the snow. So I am thoroughly enjoying every moment of this blizzard. Hopefully we'll be able to get out of here. Got my faithful friend Jack, who's driven in from where? Near, where'd you drive in from, Jack? Where'd you drive in from?
Wheat Ridge, but I go to Colorado Springs.
All right, so roughly Colorado Springs to be with us. So hopefully we can all get out of here. I get out to the seminary class. But I've got some things I want to get your input on. I want you to let me know what you're thinking. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org. Click on The Line of Fire. By the way, if you want to see a picture I took in my vehicle before I started driving off from the parking lot from the hotel, just go to my Facebook page, Ask Dr. Brown, Ask Dr. Brown. Okay. In England, some years ago, there was a street preacher, and in his preaching, he spoke against homosexual practice, among other things, as sinful. And he got attacked by a crowd, and he was arrested. The crowd was not arrested for attacking him, physically attacking him. He was arrested. This prompted one Christian attorney to say, I am leaving my practice and starting a Christian legal society in England. That's what pushed him to do it. Since then, there are cases where street preachers preaching, someone privately comes up to him from the gay and lesbian liaison to the police and asks them, do you believe homosexual practice is sin? He goes, yes, I do. And this and this and this is sin, and there's salvation in Jesus. And he goes back to preaching his message without mentioning homosexual practice and is arrested. He can be arrested because people perceived what he was saying was hateful. He was arrested. He was told he cannot preach again on the street corners until the court case is resolved. More recently, a Christian cafe owner was interrogated by police for an hour and a half because in his Christian cafe, he has a TV monitor with the Bible playing continually, and because the Bible has verses speaking against homosexual practice, he was told it was hate speech, was interrogated for it. Okay, outrageous. We all agree, utterly outrageous. On the other hand, there is now a case that has come to the courts. Five Muslims were accused of handing out leaflets after a mosque service, after service in a mosque, handing out leaflets saying sodomy is sin, and in the past people were hung for it. There's even a picture of a mannequin, someone hanging. They were hung for this. They were put to death in the past. They should be put to death today. And this is the only way to eradicate homosexuality from the society. They were giving this out in front of the mosque. Now, obviously, we deplore that. If you have any sense and any faith in Jesus and God's ways, you deplore this idea that we should be, or any society, putting homosexuals to death. Well, they are now in court charged with hate speech and inciting hatred towards those of a different sexual orientation. Do we side with the courts on this because we deplore what they did? Or is this siding with restriction of religious freedoms?
Give us strength to always do what's right.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire today. It is my joy to be with you, coming away live from Denver. We've got today, tomorrow, and Friday. Then I'll be speaking at Yeshuat Sion, a Messianic congregation here in the greater Denver area. You see it on my itinerary right on the homepage, askdrbrown.org. So please join me there if you can for the Shabbat service, Saturday morning service. And then flying home after that, it will be our oldest grandchild's 11th birthday. I was talking to Eliana last night saying, hey, Ellie, I only have a few more days to talk to you while you're 10. So she is very excited about turning 11. But that's not our subject today. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884, online, askdrbrown.org, click on The Line of Fire. How should Christians in the UK respond? Muslims are being brought to court over handing out leaflets that said that homosexuals should be put to death. We deplore that. We repudiate that. We stand against that. At the same time, we are concerned that even though this case is wrong in terms of what they're doing is wrong, handing out these tracts is wrong. We repudiate the tracts, even if there's some truth in it about homosexual practice being wrong and sinful. We repudiate the call to put people to death over this. Of course we do. Nonetheless, we recognize that the courts in England have increasingly come against the religious rights and freedoms of Christians to the point that even saying that homosexual practice is sin, preaching on a street corner or in a Christian cafe, having it aired in the Bible, that Christians are losing their rights. So where do we come down? Where do we stand in a case like this? Do we risk the further loss of our freedoms by applauding the court and saying you're doing the right thing and make it clear to the homosexual community we absolutely differ with this? Or are we just tightening the noose around our own neck? Do we say, look, we don't agree with that track, but we don't agree with the way the courts are going either? Remember, it's just about a year ago that the High Court of England agreed with gay activists that a Christian couple, a foster care couple that also adopted numbers of kids, they were told, Christian couple, they could no longer adopt children or provide foster care because the kids might, quote, get infected with Christianity. That's the actual word that was used by gay activists in their court case, infected. They didn't want the kids to get infected with Christianity, and because this Christian couple could not affirm homosexual practice in the home, therefore, they were not going to be allowed to adopt. I mean, that is absolutely outrageous and unjust and completely corrupt. That's the way courts are going in England. A Christian therapist, counselor, who counseled a man that he could change his sexual orientation and come out of homosexuality with biblical counsel and prayer, her license was revoked. Her license to practice and counsel as a therapist was revoked for telling someone they could change. So we see this very ugly, wrong tendency in England increasing. We see it some in America, but it's even more advanced in a negative sense in England. And yet, something like this with Muslims, everything in me wants to repudiate this call to put people to death, and I repudiate it. On the other hand, I recognize this as part of a larger problem in England. So how do we address it? Where do we come down? 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I know you're just sitting back trying to enjoy the show, but come on, it's Wednesday. We're focusing on the world, and I want to get you to think. Marcus in Lubbock, Texas. All right, hang on. For some reason, I'm having a hard time getting on the line. Joe, if you could bring Marcus on, I'm not sure what's the problem here on my computer, but if you could bring Marcus on the line, Andrew or Joey, that would be great. There we go. Marcus, welcome to The Line of Fire.
Thanks, Dr. Brown. Hey, I just had one question on that issue. I know that there were news stories running about something that was out of the Quran, but still was taught by, I guess, some of their standard canons, that they also had a belief that said it's proper for Muslims to kill those who change their religion. And so my question would be, if we side with them on their position about the ways that they are to handle homosexuals, long range, what does that mean for the way they would handle potential converts to Christianity?
Well, in point of fact, in any seriously committed Islamic country or territory where Muslims rule, it is against the death. It is against the law to convert, and the penalty is death. There's no question about that. But that would be the case, say, in Saudi Arabia. That would be the case in Iran. Now, God is saving people. God is saving many Muslims, but they do it at the risk of their own lives. And it's also quite common in these kinds of cultures for people to kill their own relatives. For example, if your son is a grown man, he becomes a follower of Jesus, he leaves Islam and converts to Christianity, your family could kill him and there'd be no penalty, no punishment. In fact, that would be the honorable thing for you to do. So if strongly committed Muslims led any particular country and brought Sharia law into that country, of course they would enforce that. If it was an Islamic country under Sharia law, they would absolutely enforce it, death penalty for conversion, which is why Muslims who have come to faith sometimes have had to flee their countries. Others have been persecuted and killed. Others have had to change their names, change their identities, and try to take refuge in other places because they know what's going to come against them. So that's absolutely the consistent, committed Islamic mentality. I wouldn't even call it radical Islam. I would simply say committed Islam. That is the mentality.
Okay. I was just going to say, because I remember a few, I don't know if it was months back, I think you also dealt with the issue of Westboro Baptist and their rhetoric. And I just, when I hear things like that, I kind of become concerned as a believer in siding with, those types of extremists. Just because I know it seems like it causes a problem for our own ability to speak, but at the same time, I just got out of seminary and one of the last books we studied was Isaiah, and it talks about the different times when Israel was rebuked for going down to Egypt. And I don't think that's the kind of bond that we're talking about with Islam because we're so opposed, I guess, theologically. But I see domestically some of those same problems, I guess, sometimes, and it kind of concerns me that we are sometimes tempted to make affiliations with, the world. And
yeah, rightly so. I mean, when it comes to Westboro Baptist, obviously, we are not going to go in the closet because of their hateful rhetoric. God hates homosexuals. God hates America. God hates Sweden. God hates, on and on. A military serviceman comes back in a coffin from Iraq, and they protest at the funeral saying, well, we have a fag army, and this is God's judgment because of what we've done, and they rejoice at the soldier's death. I mean, these things are so perverse and horrific. So many Christians, sadly, on just a totally social level, moral level, we're not even talking about legally, many Christians have just gone back into a closet, basically, because they have said, we don't want to be associated with them. And well, okay, so then get your message out differently. Get your message out just as publicly, but differently, with grace, with compassion, get involved with people's lives, demonstrate the love of Jesus. Where it becomes more complex is with court issues. I mentioned the last hour, Marcus, that there was a case a few years back that came against Sun Myung-moon, the leader of the Unification Church and the self-proclaimed Messiah. So it is a cult. It is absolutely a cult. It is absolutely not gospel preaching. It is not part of the church on any level. And it was a case that came against him. And the ones that defended him joined together. It was a coalition of atheist lawyers and born-again Christian lawyers and others, because they realized that there were fundamental aspects of freedoms of speech and religious freedoms that were involved here. And as much as they all differed with Moon for different reasons, they had to side together. That's where it becomes complex. But one way or another, in something like England, my take would be that what we have to do is use this as an example of what's right and what's wrong, to say, listen, this is legitimate, hateful speech to say these people should be killed and maybe we should do it ourselves. That would be an implication of it. If the law is not going to do it, maybe we should do it ourselves. When you are inciting potential violence and murder against people, well, you've got to be stopped. I don't care what the situation is, who the people are, what's involved. So we could make that statement, but then also use this to say, but let's contrast that with this. Let's contrast that with what has been done to this Christian couple, or what's been done to this Christian cafe owner, or what's been done to these Christian street preachers. Let's show the world of difference. Let's use this to show the differences in our faith. But hey, Marcus, thanks for weighing in and for raising some of the related issues. I appreciate it.
Amen. Thanks, Dr. Brown.
All right. 866-34-TRUTH. When we come back, we are going to play some of these audio clips from some of the candidates, some of the Republican presidential candidates, to hear their take, how they approach the issue of the redefinition of marriage, the question of, quote, same-sex marriage, which needs to be put in quotes because it is not marriage in God's sight, nor should it be marriage in the sight of our society, if we love God and we love what's best for our society. Stay with us.
Of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, friends, welcome back to the Line of Fire broadcast. I am watching the political campaigns unfold with interest, but still recognizing that God's purposes transcend what's happening in politics. And no matter who is elected, it is the responsibility of God's people, the church, to rise up and stand up and do what is right and be agents of positive change in the home, in the community, in the business place, in the political realm, everywhere. So I'm not looking for the president now or whoever is our next president to be the one that changes America. I'm looking for that president to do what is right in God's sight and to honor biblical principles and to honor the principles of our nation. Righteousness exalts a nation, Proverbs 14:34, but sin is a reproach to any people. That's a universal truth, a universal principle. And again, I'm not a Republican Democrat. I don't identify in that way. In fact, it feels funny to me to identify with one party. If I voted all Republican the rest of my life or all Democrat the rest of my life, trust me, I wouldn't identify myself with the party as far as who I am. But I'm watching these things with great interest, and because of my biblical and moral perspectives, I am sympathetic to some candidates more than others. 866-34-TRUTH, if you'd like to weigh in at any point here, 866-348-7884. If you want to see a picture of the wonderful blizzard taking place here in Denver that I took from my SUV this morning before driving to the studio, go to my Facebook page, Ask Dr. Brown, Ask Dr. Brown. All right, so this is from a recent debate. And the question of the redefinition of marriage came up. Rick Santorum has addressed this with great clarity. In fact, there's a wonderful clip of him at a college in New England where he addresses this and really dismantles the opposition, the student opposition, very graciously and gets them thinking and even uses their own words to prove his point. He's been very clear on this. When Michelle Bachmann was running, of course, she was very clear on these issues as well. So I want you to hear first Newt Gingrich's take, then I'll make a few comments, then Mitt Romney's take, and then Rick Perry's take. Now, pretty soon it might be immaterial. Some of these may be completely out of the race, but I just want us to hear this. So first, Newt Gingrich.
I just want to raise, since we spent this much time on these issues, I just want to raise a point about the news media bias. You don't hear the opposite question asked. Should the Catholic Church be forced to close its adoption services in Massachusetts because it won't accept gay couples, which is exactly what the state has done? Should the Catholic Church be driven out of providing charitable services in the District of Columbia because it won't give in to secular bigotry? Should the Catholic Church find itself discriminated against by the Obama administration on key delivery of services because of the bias and the bigotry of the administration? The bigotry question goes both ways, and there's a lot more anti-Christian bigotry today than there is concern on the other side, and none of it gets covered by the news media.
All right, so that's first a broader issue that Newt Gingrich raises, and it's a very important one, and I'm so glad that he addressed that. The bigotry, bigotry that goes in the other direction, the anti-Christian bigotry and bias, and we don't hear much about that, but it is tremendously impacting. And, you know, when people say you shouldn't impose your religious beliefs on us, then you have gay churches saying, well, same-sex marriage is right and Jesus is for it and we should have it. Oh, so they can impose their religious beliefs. Fascinating. Now Mitt Romney addresses head-on the question of the redefinition of marriage, so-called same-sex marriage. Listen to what he says. I would wish for greater clarity and force in the statement, but you evaluate it for yourself.
As you can tell, the people in this room feel that Speaker Gingrich is absolutely right, and I do too. And I was in a state where the Supreme Court stepped in and said marriage is a relationship required under the Constitution for people of the same sex to be able to marry. And John Adams, who wrote the Constitution, would be surprised. And it did exactly as Speaker Gingrich indicated. What happened was Catholic Charities, that placed almost half of all the adoptive children in our state, was forced to step out of being able to provide adoptive services. And the state tried to find other places to help children. We have to recognize that this decision about what we call marriage has consequence which goes far beyond a loving couple wanting to form a long-term relationship. That they can do within the law now. Calling it marriage creates a whole host of problems for families, for the law, for the practice of religion, for education. Let me say this. 3,000 years of human history shouldn't be discarded so quickly.
All right, let me say this. Hearing his statements again, you're very, very loud and clear. Perhaps when I listened the first time, I was focusing on some other things. So loud and clear, making the right points. Now, are those his heartfelt convictions? Some would dispute that, but based on what he said there, okay, loud and clear. Now, there are other statements. That's what I should have said. There are other statements of Mitt Romney that have been softer about civil unions and other things like that. That particular statement, for what it says, absolutely right. Amen. And then Rick Perry weighed in.
Let me just address this issue of gay marriage just very quickly. And it's a bigger issue, frankly. I am for a constitutional amendment that says that marriage is between a man and a woman at the federal level. But this administration's war on religion is what bothers me greatly. When we see an administration that will not defend the Defense of Marriage Act, that gives their Justice Department clear instructions to go take the ministerial exception away from our churches where that's never happened before. When we see this administration not giving money to Catholic charities for sexually trafficked individuals because they don't agree with the Catholic Church on abortion, that is a war against religion, and it's going to stop under a Perry administration.
All right, now we may get to see a Perry administration one day. At this point, doesn't look like that's happening, but who knows what will happen? Who knows what God will do in the coming months? But then there are many conservatives, especially those who identify with Tea Party, who are not happy with Mitt Romney. Here's one more audio report interviewing a Tea Party leader.
Recently, Arizona Senator John McCain told CBS's The Early Show that Republicans need to focus on defeating Barack Obama and therefore should settle quickly on Mitt Romney as their nominee. Ryan Schroyer is a spokesman for the TeaParty.net. He disagrees with McCain's assessment that Romney is the presumptive GOP standard bearer.
I think the overriding trend is that people are definitely not going towards Mitt Romney. 75% of the people in Iowa voted against Mitt Romney, despite the fact that he's been running there for 6 years.
And Schroyer does not believe those pundits who say Mitt Romney is the only GOP candidate who can beat Obama.
I don't think Mitt Romney can beat Obama. Not only is he a poor representation of the Tea Party values and the values of the Republican Party, he's a poor leader, and he would be a poor choice to put up against Barack Obama.
Schroyer says despite the wishes of John McCain, he does not think Republicans are going to pick an eventual nominee anytime soon. I'm Chad Groening.
I want to encourage you not to get caught up in the political controversy, whether you are a supporter of President Obama or whether you passionately want to see him out of office, whether you are involved in focusing on the Republican presidential primaries. I want to encourage you not to get caught up in the moment. Get caught up in Jesus. Get caught up in the Spirit. Get caught up in doing good. Get caught up in making a difference. And then get involved as you feel to get involved. And pray. Pray, pray, pray for God to have his way in America. And pray even harder for God to awaken us, his believers, his followers, to make a difference here in society. If you don't yet have your copy of Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, don't wait any longer. It'll be the most eye-opening book you've read, perhaps in your lifetime, the most translated book I've written. Just $12, postage paid. It'll give you insight on what's happening in the Middle East today as well as history. 800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978 to order. Oh, I've got some quotes when we come back. You won't believe it.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right. As a result of my article on Congressman Ron Paul and Israel, I got a whole lot of interesting emails sent, and I want to share one or two with you. I want to take you to Greece with some laws that have been recently passed that are rightly, well, there's an outrage, uproar over it. And I want to tell you about what's happened in Hawaii. 866-34-TRUTH, Michael Brown, coming your way live from Denver, Colorado, in the midst of a beautiful blizzard here. 866-34-TRUTH. 866-348-7884 online. AskDrBrown.org. We've covered a whole lot of other interesting topics the first hour and a half of broadcasting today. Things of international interest and of major interest to us as American believers. Some things going on in New York City, some things going on in Virginia. So please catch up with the broadcast later on our website, AskDrBrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. You can catch all of the shows as well. And if you're in the greater Denver area, join me Saturday morning at Congregation Yeshuat Sion for their Shabbat service, as I'll speak there before flying home. And you can get that info right on my homepage on our itinerary. Okay, let's go to Greece. You're not going to believe this one. Okay, you ready? Furor in Greece over pedophilia as a disability. This is AP News within the last day. Greek disability groups expressed anger Monday at a government decision to expand the list of state-recognized disability categories, like if you're blind or if you're crippled, right? State-recognized disability categories to include pedophiles, exhibitionists, and kleptomaniacs? The National Confederation of Disabled People called the action incomprehensible and said pedophiles are now awarded a higher government disability pay than some people who have received organ transplants. The Labor Ministry said categories added to the expanded list that also includes pyromaniacs, compulsive gamblers, fetishists, and sadomasochists were included for purposes of medical assessment and used as a gauge for allocating financial assistance. But NCDP leader Yanis Vardakastanis, who is blind, warned the new list could create new difficulties for disabled Greeks who are already facing benefit cuts due to the country's financial crisis. He said, "What's happened is incomprehensible. I think there's some big mistake. The ministry should have a different policy on disability," he told the Associated Press. "The list contains major changes to disability quotients, which could effectively remove many people from access to benefits." The new list gives pyromaniacs and pedophiles disability pay up to 35% compared to 80% for heart transplant recipients. He said it's really not serious to grant peeping toms a 20 to 30% disability rate and 10% to diabetics who have insulin shots 4 or 5 times a day. Is this outrageous or what? I mean, first I thought, hey, all the sexual expressions, they're fine. So fetishists or sadomasochists, they just do what they want to do, and that's healthy and fine and just another sexual expression. Who said they were disabled or handicapped? I mean, maybe people who are same-sex attracted are disabled or handicapped, right? Put pedophiles in another category, but fetishists, you know, or sadomasochists, and hey, not hurting anybody unless they just want to participate in this, theoretically. Of course, I'm not arguing that that's a healthy practice. Please get my sarcastic point there. But now to say, well, they have a disability. A kleptomaniac has a disability. A pyromaniac has a disability. A peeping Tom has a disability. You're not morally responsible? These are not moral issues? You go back to, hey, my genes made me do it. Or just this is the way I am and I can't change. Judge, the reason I did these things and the reason I stole from the store and burned the store down and then after that went and committed acts of peeping Tom is just the way I am. All right, yeah, we'll just give you some money for it to help with your disability. Whoa. We'll be back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire. Look, why am I telling you this story from Greece? 866-34-TRUTH. You can weigh in. You can vent if you want to. 866-348-7884. Why am I sharing this story that was shared with me from Greece? That there is a furor now taking place because Greek disability groups are outraged at the government decision to expand a list of state-recognized disability categories to include pedophiles, exhibitionists, and kleptomaniacs. Now, it's not saying, I just gave it an example. So, you know, you tell the court, hey, I'm just doing what's natural for me. I'm handicapped, so you can't hold me guilty. This is not a legal decision on that level. This is a decision saying they should get some disability compensation. The list also includes pyromaniacs, compulsive gamblers, fetishists, and sadomasochists. And they're going to be included for purposes of medical assessment and used as a gauge for allocating financial assistance. So the way it breaks down, according to the head of a disabled organization in Greece, he said it's really not serious to grant peeping toms a 20 to 30% disability rate and 10% to diabetics who have insulin shots 4 or 5 times a day. Why do I share this with you? Because there is an increasing tendency to say, I'm born this way and this is who I am and I can't change. Or for whatever set of causes, this is who I am and I can't change. There is an increasing tendency in our society to go in that direction. Those of you who have my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, know well that in the chapter that I deal with it is gay the new black. In other words, the whole idea that people can say, I'm born this way. I go through this major scientific evidence saying that there's no evidence that someone is born with same-sex attraction. But let's just say there was. Some people argue there was. Let's just say there was. Well, then there are researchers who say there's a violent gene. There's an adultery gene. There's a ruthless gene. Do we use that in our defense? The reason a husband is violent with his wife? I just have a violent gene. The reason that some people become dictators is because they have a ruthless gene and therefore they're just doing what comes naturally to them. Maybe there's a homophobia gene, and the reason that some people are, quote, homophobic is because that's who they are. Is it any worse then or any better than being homosexual? Well, an adultery gene, honey, it's just in my genes. Oh, yeah, sure. She'll like that. She'll accept it. An obesity gene. Well, let's have fat pride parades. The logic is so terribly faulty. But the idea that a pyromaniac or a kleptomaniac or a fetishist, or worse still, in terms of potential abuse of children, a pedophile, and then sadomasochists and these others, that they're going to get disability compensation in Greece, this is completely outrageous. And it makes us realize that regardless of what factors might contribute to someone's behavior, why someone might be more prone to be a rapist, why someone might be more prone to be a liar, why someone may be more prone to be obese, why someone may be more prone to tell the truth, why someone may be more prone to be spiritually oriented, why someone may be more prone to be a kleptomaniac, why someone may be more prone to practice homosexuality, that correlation is not causation and predisposition is not predestination. In other words, we all ultimately make choices. God didn't make us do it against our will, and the devil didn't make us do it against our will. And the only way the devil could make us do something against our will is if we first willfully submit to him by other acts and other choices. I was just reading James Jacob last night before going to sleep, and in the first chapter, he says, let no one say when he's tempted, I'm tempted by God, because God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone. Rather, we are tempted, we are drawn away by our own desires, right? When lust has conceived, it brings forth sin, and when sin is conceived, it brings forth death. The LSD of James, Jacob 1, and the King James, lust, sin, death, that ultimately there's something in us that we act on. I'm sure people have all kinds of struggles. I don't imagine that someone would choose to be a pyromaniac. What am I going to do with my life? I could run for Congress. Maybe hard. I could be a medical researcher, look for a cure for cancer. That's good. It may take a few years. Maybe I'd be a top baseball player, got some baseball skill. I think I'll be a pyromaniac. No, it's not that someone just chooses to do it like that, but obviously they make a choice. They make a choice to do a particular thing because of a particular drive that's in them, and yet they are accountable and responsible. Listen, you don't need to be a rocket scientist prophet to know that this is coming our way more and more. The idea that these are handicaps, the idea that that one person is blind, one person is a paraplegic, one person has this other condition, that those are all disabilities, and society should work every way possible, and the church should work every way possible to help people with disabilities and to show compassion. Yes, we all affirm that. I think we all recognize that. Absolutely. At the same time, to put people in that category, pedophiles, fetishists, sadomasochists, pyromaniacs, kleptomaniacs, peeping toms, to put them in the category of someone who is disabled is to basically to eliminate the category of sin and to eliminate the category of moral responsibility. My genes made me do it. It's just who I am. I was born this way. Watch it increase more and more and more in our society in coming days, and watch it become more and more difficult for us to hold forth moral authority and to say, this is sin, this is wrong, this is a violation of God's standards, and we willfully did what we did. Even if we had a drive, we acted on it, we are responsible. 866-34-TRUTH. While I'm going around the world, I've got some other quotes for you in a moment, but just want to give you a report from Hawaii. This came up when I was down in Hawaii last October. I had the joy of meeting many of the Christian leaders there and many of our listeners in Honolulu and other parts of Hawaii. And same-sex civil unions was pushed through. Initially, it was defeated in the Congress there, and then it was pushed through. Pastors were telling me the way it was done, the backhanded way it was done, the governor's support of it was just absolutely outrageous. Well, Hawaiian churches have now been denied a request to block same-sex civil unions. Two churches in Hawaii were denied a petition for a restraining order to block a new state law that would allow same-sex couples to enter into civil unions. The Emmanuel Temple House of Praise and Lighthouse Outreach Center Assembly of God believe that the law, which went into effect on January 1st, 2012, violates their civil rights and constitutional protections for religious freedom, the Court News Service reported. Filing a federal lawsuit against the state, Governor Neil Abercrombie and the Department of Health Director Loretta Fuddy, the two churches hope to receive an injunction that would help them, quote, maintain their First, Fifth, and 14th Amendment rights. They argued that they would face sexual discrimination claims, civil penalties, and fines if they refused to perform a seminar ceremony for a same-sex couple on church grounds. Though the new law exempted clergy from performing the ceremonies, it did not allow churches the right to refuse the use of their property for same-sex civil unions. Despite their attempts to secure a restraining order, however, U.S. District Judge Michael Seabright denied their request, stating that there was no realistic danger of sustaining a direct injury under the statute. What nonsense! What utter madness! For a church facility to be required to allow their facility to be used to perform a same-sex civil union, which to them is an abominable defilement of marriage. We deeply love the people involved and say Jesus died for the people involved, but this is not marriage. It's an abomination to call it marriage. And to say that the churches should not be able to say, not in our building, and that they'd have to go along with this and there's no direct injury? What nonsense. Responding to the decision, Matt Barber, constitutional attorney and vice president of Liberty Counsel Action, told the Christian Post, Judge Seabright did not address the merits of the case and denied the preliminary injunction because he felt church representatives did not yet have standing. He wrote a couple would have to ask, they would have to be denied, they would have then to file suit if a church refused to accommodate a request to hold a civil union ceremony. Still, left as written, the sweeping new civil unions law does place churches, mosques, and synagogues in the crosshairs of the homosexual activist political lobby. Matt added, at some point, a lawsuit will be filed, or the commission will make a ruling on the complaints. When that happens, it is likely that the case would be considered ripe for adjudication. So, in other words, he's saying that the judge is saying, look, this hasn't happened yet. We have no evidence it's going to happen. If it happens, then it's another story. Well, can I tell you, when it does happen and churches stand up for what's right, they'll be told, well, you know, this is, you're standing against justice. You're standing against freedom. You're standing against equality. You're bigoted. Years back, when I would tell people certain things are going to happen, they said, it's not going to happen. You're crazy. Now when it happens, I say, yeah, you deserve it. You bigots belong in the closet. All right, we'll come back with your calls and one more set of quotes from, I guess, the support of Ron Paul. Sure, it doesn't represent all of them, but you got to hear it. We'll be back.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Remember, it's Wednesday. Wednesday is our focus on the world, moral, cultural issues. Yesterday, Tuesday, our teaching day. I was joined by my friend, Pastor Gino Geraci, as we talked about Bible versions and principles of Bible translation and even some interpretation issues. Tomorrow, we're going to talk about why the preservation and salvation of Israel should matter to all believers, should be important to all followers of Jesus. And then Friday, as always, you've got questions, we've got answers. Today, our focus on what's happening in the world, kingdom perspectives, biblical perspectives on what's happening in our society. I want to share an email I received from a Ron Paul supporter. I don't take it as representative of all Ron Paul supporters. It just happens to be a Ron Paul supporter who wrote to me. I want to share that with you in a moment. But first, some calls. James in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hello, Dr. Brown.
Hey, man.
Hey, you're talking about the government of Greece classifying certain proclivities as being disabilities.
Yes, sir. So, and that's exactly what they are, proclivities. Exactly.
And so what I was thinking while I was listening to you was, okay, well, let's assume for the sake of argument only, okay, that these proclivities are legitimately called disabilities. Well, then, along that, consistent with that reasoning, seems like you could also argue that a person who can't understand that these proclivities are legitimately to be considered disabilities, that person who can't understand that has a mental disability themselves and should be able to ask for compensation for that.
Yeah, exactly. Or look at it this way, that a guy beats up a gay man, right? And then he says to the court, but I'm born homophobic. I'm born a violent
right.
homophobe. I mean, it's just as absurd. So the born this way, we're all just handicapped. If I legitimately can't see your point, don't call me a bigot. I'm just handicapped, right?
That's right.
So, then all moral responsibility goes out the window. And we know there are legitimate handicaps. And we know that there are certain mental disorders that create terrible suffering for individuals and may contribute to some wrongful behavior, which is why the courts will assess someone's mental stability in evaluating this. But you're absolutely right that if I can't recognize that this proclivity to fetishism, sadomasochism, kleptomaniac, pyromaniac, pedophilia, roll them all into one, that these proclivities are actually disabilities, that I must have a disability in my understanding of other disabilities and the absurdity of it. So thanks for boiling it down for us, James.
All right.
I appreciate it, man. God bless you. Look, I can't imagine someone living with some of these struggles. You know what I'm saying? Someone that feels compelled to do self-destructive things or socially destructive things. I can't imagine the struggles that they live with, but every one of us has some tendency, some desire to do something that's wrong in God's sight, wrong to another person, violating our own beliefs or convictions, and we have to say no. And with God's help, we can say no. And that's why the judge doesn't believe it when you say the devil made me do it, or when you say my genes made me do it. All right, just wanted to talk about those things, but I talk about them constructively as well. I talk about them so as to say, friends, these things are coming our way. and be ready for them. Okay, let me just see if I could find this email. After my latest article on Ron Paul and Israel, I got a whole bunch of emails, kind of record-setting responses that were sent to me through the website. And there were some that were very balanced and gracious and taking exception with me, some that were agreeing, disagreeing with me, but then thanking me for the article. And then there were some that were kind of interesting. I just had one in front of me. Let me find it again. You know what I found from quite a number of the people who wrote to me? The attitude of, well, what's Israel ever done for us? Why should we even care about Israel? Why should we do anything for Israel? But the one that got my attention most is, oh, come on. I've lost sight of it. All right. I don't know. Maybe I just accidentally deleted it while looking at it. But here's what he first said. He lays into me with, number one, what has Israel ever done for us? That's where he starts. And then he talks about atrocities being committed by Israelis and Palestinians. But the best part was when he explains that Ahmadinejad would never call for the destruction of Israel, that that's just a poor translation of what he actually said. Rather, he wanted Israel removed from the pages of history or something like that. He never called for the annihilation of Israel. Oh, I didn't know we were talking about just one statement. I wasn't aware we were talking about only one statement. I wasn't aware that we weren't talking about something that he has said repeatedly that has been translated by repeated numbers of people, and there was nothing hasty about it. Yes, he called for the annihilation of Israel, the destruction of Israel. But let's go a little further. On Jerusalem Day in Iran, when a million plus Iranian Muslims storm the streets and burn Israeli flags and American flags and chant death to Israel and death to America, do you think it's just kind of a nuanced way of saying that we would rather that the history of Israel was not written so clearly on the history pages because it bothers us, but we have no issue with the nation continuing to exist and be right here neighbors in the Middle East, and that's why we're burning the flags, and that's why we're chanting death to Israel, and that's why we're a million plus strong in the streets? Look, regardless of whether you're an interventionist or not, regardless of whether you support Ron Paul's stands or not, let's at least wake up to reality. Even if you think we caused the hostility coming against us from the radical Islamic world, even if you believe that, the fact is the hostility is there and it is real, especially towards Israel. And just remember, in Islamic thought, territory that was once controlled by Islam that then is lost to Islam is an open sore spot. So, for example, the fact that you had the Moorish conquest of Spain, what, 800 years ago, roughly, and that parts of Spain and other parts of Europe were under Muslim rule, Muslim authority, and then that was lost. That is considered to be an open sore. All the more, massively more, the fact that there is a Jewish state in the Middle East. So at least let's be realistic. All right, friends, super important information. If I had a way of pushing a button and downloading this information into all of your heads, I would do it. I believe it's that important. My book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, we'll share more about that tomorrow. I'll read some eye-opening quotes to you. Things that everybody needs to know and understand about church history and about what's happening in the Middle East. Let's take the blinders off our eyes. It's just $12 postage paid. That's the cheapest we can get it to you. $12 postage paid. Call to order 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. Or you can order online at askdrbrown.org. Click on the line of fire for today's special offer. 1-800-278-9978. Don't forget to visit my Facebook page, Ask Dr. Brown, so you can check out a picture of the blizzard as I was driving into the studio. I'll see what weather awaits us as we leave here and I head over to the seminary to teach. My bottom line today, society is going increasingly mad. Society is embracing things that make absolutely no sense and ultimately repudiating personal responsibility in the name of disability born that way. Let us bring sobriety and sanity back to our society.